From One World Trade Center in Manhattan, overlooking dozens of golf courses that will never have us as members, this is the Golf Digest Podcast. Welcome back to the Golf Digest Podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and today I am excited to be joined by 17-time PGA Tour winner, a U.S. Open champ, and a man who will now be known as Mr. 58. Jim Furyk, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so when you hear that, you know, you instantly got this new nickname, Mr. 58. I know it's been a couple weeks now. What's it been like?
Pretty interesting. I think first and foremost, everyone asked me if I like to be called Mr. 58, and I think my answer was I still haven't signed anything, Mr. 58.
Okay.
And I'm not asking to be called Mr. 58, but it is kind of cool. I'll say
that. Yeah. So we're not going to see any monogrammed gear from you. I know Annika Sorenstam had a Miss 59 hat after she shot 59. We're not going to see that from you, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's, like I said, I can't promise it. But I haven't done it yet. It feels a little strange and a little surreal.
Sure. Now, I think it's so interesting that you were struggling so much the day before that you did something that you said you've never done before, and that's send video of your swing to your dad to look over. Maybe if you could tell everybody a little about that and how that happened.
Yeah, it started with a text. Mm-hmm. Dad and I were talking a little bit by text, and I told him that I wasn't real comfortable with my swing. I just didn't feel good. I really hit the ball poorly on Saturday. I wasn't in it solid, wasn't in it straight. And so I went to the range and kind of texted some different thoughts. He kind of gave me his thoughts back, and we were kind of communicating that way. I really, you know, we kind of came up with it together, but I really felt my swing had gotten long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was getting my upper body and lower body out of sync. And I started making some good swings on the range, and I had my caddy video with my phone video a swing. Which is something I don't really do, but I wanted to see how long my swing was. And after the session, it looked pretty short to me, but I really haven't watched my swing on video very much. And so I sent the video off to my dad and said, does this look too short? Does this look right? Well, you know, is this what it usually looks like? And, you know, he made some comments about the swing and what he liked about it. And it gave me some confidence for the next day to go out and just kind of give it a try. I mean, I had nothing to lose. I was off in the third group of the day. I was in 70th position.
Sure.
You know, on a Sunday morning. I was just trying to find a little bit of momentum to take into this last week in the Greensboro and then in the playoffs. And lo and behold, had my best event, I guess the best event ever, or best round ever on a PGA Tour.
Yeah, when you get into a groove like that, was there a specific thought maybe that you had running through your head, or I don't know, was there a song or something running through your head, something that you just kept kind of going back to throughout the day, or is there nothing like that?
Not really.
Yeah.
I was actually in a pretty good mood in the morning. Mm-hmm. I was excited to get out there and kind of try what I'd worked on the day before, but really didn't expect to go out and fire a real low number or anything. You know, I was hoping to go out and play a good solid round, I said, and gain some momentum. But it was really, you know, kind of got off to a fast start. I was 3 under through 3 and 5 under through 6, and you know, before you know it, I, you know, finished the front 9 at 8 under par, and kind of had that like, well, here we go again. You know,
mm-hmm.
I broke 60 a few years ago, shooting 8 under on the first side. Figured, you know, hey, got another opportunity. So it became a very exciting day pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, I guess your kind of unofficial nickname before this was the Grinder, and I think everybody thinks of you as, perfect for the U.S. Open, fairways, greens, make a lot of pars. But meanwhile, here you have broken 60. You're the only person to do it twice on the PGA Tour. Have we totally gotten your style of play wrong for all these years?
That definitely was a nickname given by the media.
Okay, yeah.
no player ever walks by me on the tour and calls me Grinder.
Okay.
Or the Grinder. I think that was someone from the media kind of threw that out there, and it seems as though once it was out there once, it's kind of run with a little bit.
But, right.
It's interesting. I think I do get, and it's a good stereotype,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I people think that, well, you play good on hard courses where par is a good score, where
right.
And that's kind of a U.S. Open style, and that's been the major that I've had the most success in,
right.
the most opportunities to win, and of course, my only victory in a major. So, but a lot of folks forget, too, that early in my career, three out of my first four wins were at Las Vegas, and I think scores of 22 to 28 under
right.
For those wins. So a place where you have to make a ton of birdies, you have to shoot under par every day and go low, and I guess I'm kind of comfortable with both scenarios, if that makes sense. I mean, if you gave me one avenue, I think I'd go with the real hard course where mm-hmm. par is a good score, because it takes a lot of patience, and it tests not only your physical, but, you know, how patient can you be, and how can you accept that you're going to make some bogeys and get some bad breaks. Yeah, it's interesting now that you make a good point. Of all the people you think that would go under par or go under 60 twice, I probably wouldn't be at the top of the list, but I guess I'm comfortable both ways.
What are you superstitious, and did you do anything before that round that maybe you've carried over now to other rounds?
No, actually, I joked. I really haven't told many people. I joked earlier today in an interview that I was kind of behind that morning. I hit balls for a while and was BSing a little bit too much with my caddy and whoever was hitting balls next to me, and I actually ran out of time. I didn't even go to the putting green before I shot 50. I just went straight to the first tee and let it fly, and I kind of got out of my routine a little bit and had a good round. But I am a little bit superstitious, but nothing that I've carried from that round on. I think I have enough of them right now to carry me out.
Okay. Not the same breakfast. What did you eat for breakfast that day? Maybe something, you know.
Every day I'm eggs.
Okay.
Banana and peanut butter and maybe a little oatmeal. I mean, I'm like the same breakfast every day.
Okay. Now the reaction to the 58, I'm wondering, how did it compare to the reaction to winning the U.S. Open? Because obviously, you know, like you said, you go out the third group on Sunday at the Travelers Championship, but it really became, I mean, obviously you shoot the lowest score ever, but it really became a national sports story. How did it compare?
It's hard to compare to 2003.
Right.
Social media is not the same.
True, true.
You know, there's no Twitter and hashtags and you know, even the texting and the emailing, you know, off your phone wasn't as great then as it is now. So, you know, I'll look back to, like, when I won last year at the RBC Heritage.
Mm-hmm.
I probably got double to triple the amount of texts and emails.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Probably double to triple the amount of, you know, attention and interview requests. And you know, I kind of laugh at some of the things that were that my agent, you know, fielded some questions that were pretty interesting and offers. So it's amazing, actually, how much more attention. And it's funny, it's one round.
Right, right.
It was a great round, don't get me wrong, but and it's been a fun 2 weeks. I mean, every day I've talked about shooting that score numerous times, and I'm still talking to guys on tour who haven't seen me since that are, I haven't seen you since, that was great. And, you know, they start in and start asking questions and tell me what they were doing
right.
and how they were following around, whether it was by on their phone or I had a couple of guys say that their caddy was following me on, like, the shot tracker on their phone while they were playing the same event to figure out, you know, where I had hit it. And did I hit the fairway? Was on the green? Did I make another birdie? It was kind of interesting.
Wow. That's great. Well, obviously you did move on and you played great this past week. I know it wasn't the 18th hole that you wanted at the Wyndham, but another top 10. And I think I saw some stat that in the last six rounds, you've hit 90% of your greens. So obviously you're playing at a super high level right now. We know the Ryder Cup is on your mind. I guess, how much is it on your mind when you're playing in these events? We know you want to make it as a player as well as a captain.
While I'm playing, I'm not thinking of that.
Okay.
And as you mentioned, yeah, that finish yesterday actually really stung. It probably hurt. I double bogeyed the last hole. It probably, you know, I played the last four or three over. You know, if I get those in at even par, I probably would have tied for second. It would have jumped way up in the FedEx Cup. It would have jumped me up farther in the Ryder Cup point. So it definitely stung. You know, I guess it's on the back of my mind. I mean, I love playing in the Ryder Cup and would love to be a part of it. I'm in an interesting situation in that not only am I trying to make the team, but I'm an assistant captain on the team.
Sure.
So it's interesting, unique, awkward situation, but a lot of fun. And then I'm also, because I started the season so late, I'm 94th in the points for the FedEx Cup. So I need to play well this week at Bethpage.
Right.
At the Barclays, just to advance Deutsche Bank. You know, I want to keep my name in there. Captain, you know, Davis has to make his three picks after the BMW. So, you know, if I weren't to advance through Barclays or Deutsche Bank, that's, you know, one or two less events I have to try to impress.
You mentioned Captain Love. I wonder, has he been in touch with you since the 58? And I guess how impressed was he by that round?
Well, we were in touch. I'll be honest. I mean, he joked around, you know, about how, you know, kind of said, hey, have you been playing well lately, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also talked about just some different things, you know, some ideas that Tom Lehman had, the Tiger had.
Mm-hmm.
Davis had a couple questions he was trying to get everyone's opinion on, and he ran a few things by me that I thought about for a couple hours and then, you know, messaged him back and told him what I thought. So, you know, we're always working on it, and it's fun. I'm kind of always thinking about the Ryder Cup. Part of the time I'm thinking about it as a captain, and part of the time I'm, you know, I'm playing and thinking about trying to make the team. So, like I said, it's a unique situation.
What now, obviously you got off to such a slow start the season because of the wrist surgery. Were there any concerns that at your age or at your point in the career that it would be tough to get back to this level? And you've done it so quickly.
You know, it's nice that you say that. I mean, it feel like it took a couple, you know, 2 or 3 months to get back to a level where I really feel like I'm playing well right now. And, you know, when you're playing, that seems slow. I guess, you know, when you really step back from the situation and being gone for 7 or 8 months and going through surgery, it probably was pretty quick, you know, in all reality. But, you know, I played so well last year, and I got up to, you know, maybe being ranked third or fourth in the world again at the age of 45. I had so much confidence before the injury. I guess I never really thought that I couldn't get back to the level. You know, would I be healthy enough to do so? How long would it take? I guess there's always doubt, but I mean, I know it's in there. It just, you know, I guess what surprised me, and it shouldn't, is mechanically I've been very sound all year. I've hit the ball very well. The hard part was kind of getting the touch and the feel and the scoring back.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to have come around here in the last month or so.
Now, you mentioned the Barclays is this week, obviously, kicks off the FedEx Cup playoffs, but also the last event to make it into the top eight and automatically qualify for the Ryder Cup. Is there any, you know, I know like Ricky Fowler added Wyndham last week. Is there any, in your mind, real distinction between making it on points or making it as a captain's pick?
Well, I think as a player, you're always, you always want to make it on points.
Okay.
But once the team has been decided and we have 12 guys going to the Ryder Cup, I've never thought about which one of my teammates made it on points or which one was a captain's pick. I mean,
right.
At that point, you're a team.
Right.
And, you know, Davis will talk to the assistants and he'll talk to the players that made it on points and get an idea for, you know, who he wants to pick and who he wants to add to the team. And there's a number of good picks, and he's got four of them,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. So, but no, I think if, you know, you always want to go ahead and make it on points and kind of leave no doubt,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Right.
Because then it becomes everyone else's opinion on whether you should be on the team or not. Some guys seem to get picked a lot. Some guys don't,
mm-hmm.
for one reason or another. But once the team's decided, I never really have sat back and thought, oh, he was a pick or, oh, he made it on play. I mean, at that point, your group, you're one. You know, you go over there as 12 guys together. So, you know, but I don't think there's a distinction if that's what you meant, but
right.
Obviously as a player, you want to eliminate any doubt and make the team on points.
Sure. Now, I know you and your wife, Tabitha, are involved in charity this week at the Barclays. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, my wife and I started our own foundation in 2010 and have been involved with charity. And now that we're starting the FedEx Cup playoffs and, you know, specifically here at the event at Barclays, we've learned a little bit about FedEx and their charitable causes, which is FedEx Cares. So they're going to donate $200 million to over 200 communities worldwide by the year 2020.
Wow.
Which we thought was phenomenal. Yeah. And then this week at Barclays, they're going to partner up with a group called Dress for Success. And so that's a nonprofit organization that empowers women to achieve economic independence. And what we're asking folks to do this week here in the New York area is Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the first 100 fans that bring an article of women's clothing, so nearly new business attire for women, if they bring an article of clothing like that to the tournament, the first 100 folks have an opportunity to get a ticket for the golf tournament during the tournament days. So it's a pretty cool organization, and my wife and I are very proud to kind of partner with FedEx on this and help out the community.
That sounds great. It sounds great for the fans as well. Jim, one last thing. Do you have any, you mentioned the vice captains and the captains getting together. Do you have any sort of fun team or, you know, gatherings, so to speak, planned for Minnesota next month?
Before or during?
During. Or anything. Any team activities you could let us in on, or is it all secret?
I think once the 8 guys will be chosen here after Barclays. So the top 8 in points make the team, and I think once that happens, we'll all get together as a group and kind of have a little team bonding and goofing around. And I know at that point, you know, you will be discussing a lot with the guys, not only captain's picks, but you know, give them an expectation of what we see, how we're going to, you know, build the team, how we're going to put groups together. And kind of get ideas for them about who they may want to play with, and you know, whether that's guys that are already in the top 8, or, you know, those guys out there that are just outside they think are playing well and they'd love to see as partners. So we'll get together, and I would say probably 2 or 3 times before the event starts. Now, as far as during the event,
mm-hmm.
there's already a lot of functions planned. I mean, we have dinners and different functions going on, but I'm sure the captain's got a few tricks up his sleeve as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Congrats on the 58, Mr. 58. We will call you that out of respect. And good luck going forward on making the team, the Ryder Cup team, as a player as well. Thanks for joining us, Jim.
I appreciate it. Hey, if anyone wants to learn more about what we're doing with FedEx, they can go to Twitter at FedEx. So I appreciate it.
At FedEx. Great. All right. Thanks so much, Jim. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Jim Furyk for joining us, and thank you for listening. Please subscribe to us on iTunes if you haven't done so already, and check back next week to see who our guest is.